Support for the show comes from a new season of Crucible Moments, a podcast from Sequoia Capital. What is a crucible moment? It's a turning point where we face a tough decision and our response can shape the rest of our lives. These decisions happen in business too, and Sequoia Capital's podcast, Crucible Moments, gives you a behind-the-scenes look, asking founders of some of the world's most important tech companies, like YouTube, DoorDash, Reddit, and more, to reflect on those critical junctures that define who they are today. Tune into season two of Crucible Moments today, and you can catch up on season one at CrucibleMoments.com or wherever you listen to podcasts. Support for the Vergecast comes from AT&T. What's it like to get the new iPhone 16 Pro with AT&T Next Up Anytime? It's like when you first light up the grill and think of all the mouthwatering possibilities. Learn how to get the new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence on AT&T and the latest iPhone every year with AT&T Next Up Anytime. AT&T, connecting changes everything. Apple Intelligence coming fall 2024 with Siri and device language set to U.S. English. Some features and languages will be coming over the next year. $0 offer may not be available on future iPhones. Next Up Anytime feature may be discontinued at any time, subject to change. Additional fees, terms, and restrictions apply. See AT&T.com/iPhone for details.
Support for this show comes from ServiceNow, the AI platform for business transformation. You've heard the big hype around AI, but the truth is AI is only as powerful as the platform it's built into. ServiceNow is the platform that puts AI to work for people across your business, removing friction and frustration for your employees, supercharging productivity for your developers, providing intelligent tools for your service agents to make customers happier. All that is built into a single platform that you can use right now. That is why the world works with ServiceNow. Visit servicenow.com/AI for people to learn more.
Hello and welcome to Vergecast, the flagship podcast of 6-inch wall tablets. It's what everybody wants.
Do we have to be? I don't like that one very much.
From what I gather, this is the product that's going to set the tech industry on fire. It's going to happen, David.
Sure. Listen, if it'll make you shut up about your garage door, I'll take it.
Oh, no, there's going to be some garage door talk on this show. Hi, I'm your friend Eli. David Pierce is here.
Hello.
A little later, Kylie Robinson is going to join us. We're going to talk about whether or not AI is real, whether it's just a fake idea. The Vergecast. There's a lot of news to talk about this week. It is week -8 of the Trump administration. Is that how they count? That's how George Washington.
Yeah, that seems right.
That's in the Constitution.
As he was in a boat, he was like, this is week -6. And then that makes sense. Yeah.
Elon is already doing stuff. There's a fake Department of Government Efficiency that we should talk about for as much as we need to talk about it. There's a fake wireless carrier called Boost Mobile that we should talk about that I'm excited to talk about.
It's a real carrier, Eli.
There are rumors that Apple's going to make a wall tablet, so we got to talk about garage door openers as promised. But let's start with what's happening on social media. Mm-hmm. We've talked a lot about the Fediverse on this show, about the idea of the open social web, that maybe you weren't going to be locked into one platform, that you can move around. That's Mastodon. There's a protocol called ActivityPub that we've talked about a lot. Threads from Meta is using ActivityPub. They've very slowly inched their way to support. People have a lot of issues with Threads overall because of its moderation. And then this week, after the election, after Elon has basically turned the X algorithm to being a pure flood of propaganda for himself, not even, I would say, conservative ideas, just for Elon Musk. People are fleeing X. They're out of there. Huge drop in users. And they're not going to Threads or Mastodon. They're going to Blue Sky, which is a different federated social platform that uses a different protocol called AT protocol. I've talked to Blue Sky CEO Jay Graber on Decoder. We can get into the weeds of it. But it seems like that is the winner in social media this week. David, what do you think is going on here?
Is it the winner? This is such an interesting question.
This week,
yes, it is the vibes winner in a very real way. And I think the thing that we've discovered over the 2 years since Elon Musk bought Twitter is that the vibe shift really matters. And I think your diagnosis is exactly right. Right. Like Threads was the thing. Threads probably still is the thing. And we should talk about it. But Threads has 275 million users. That's what Mark Zuckerberg announced. They're signing up 1 million people a day. Like that thing is growing like a weed. There's been some news that Threads is going to turn on ads next year, which means it's going to be a big scale business. all anyone wants to talk about right now is Blue Sky. And I think Blue Sky has hit something like mainstream critical mass, which I think is A, really exciting, B, really annoying in some ways that we should talk about, and C, really surprising. I think, if I'm being completely honest, I kind of left Blue Sky for dead a while ago. It had its first spike. People were really excited. I think Blue Sky has done a lot of things really right in how to build this kind of thing. It was very smart about how to think about identity. It was very smart in thinking about discovery. They built products like List and Messages. And like, as a platform, Blue Sky is dramatically better than any of the other competitors right now. But it was weird. And it was like, all the people who went to Blue Sky at the beginning went to be weird on purpose. And that is like fine and good as far as it goes, right? And so my thinking was there's going to be this subset of people, like the Twitter shit posters, who are going to be very happy on Blue Sky and we're just going to sort of hang out with each other over there. And it got out of that this week. We're now in a moment where people who don't want any part of that are coming onto Blue Sky. People are coming back to Blue Sky. AOC came back to Blue Sky and caused like a mini uproar when she started posting there again. Everybody's trying to make skeeting happen again instead of calling it posting. Like, Blue Sky is I think by far like an order of magnitude out of the actual competitor to Threads world right now. But in terms of like who has the juice, I think Blue Sky legitimately has the juice at this point.
Yeah. Two things about this that I think are really important. One, Threads is an algorithmic platform, and so is X now.
Yeah.
You open X, I open my X account, and it is just the algorithm feeding me whatever Elon Musk wants me to see, which is mostly himself.
Yeah.
Weird. And I think people are just reacting to that and reacting to that poison. It is a right-wing echo chamber. It is impossible to participate there unless you say exactly what that audience wants to hear. That's bad. Like, that's algorithmic collapse is real. I don't think anybody wants to be in an echo chamber that powerful in any way, shape, or form.
Some people do. I mean, to be blunt, some people do, and that's fine, right? But it is like the distance between X and like Truth Social and Rumble is smaller and smaller every day.
Yeah.
And there is a community of people who is well served by that. Great. But it is like that platform has run away from anything like mainstream appeal. Like, actively running away from it.
Yeah. And we should talk about the extreme hypocrisy of Elon Musk in general, who is like, well, I'm a free speech warrior, and then slowly closed the boundary of speech on X to be exactly what he wants.
Yeah.
The point I'm making is Threads is also an algorithmic platform. You open it and you just see a fire hose of whatever Meta wants you to see, which is the most inane engagement bait that has ever been produced in the entire
thing. Yes.
Right. Like, and it's like not a, you open it, you're like, what is happening here? What am I seeing? And yes, there's a reverse cron feed that you can like slide over to, but it's not the default. Even if you do set it, they'll drop you back into the algorithmic feed at a moment's notice. And really, you just get to a place where they're not platforms that replace Twitter. Like, they don't serve the same role. They're not doing the same job. Threads, I think, intentionally, they've talked about how they don't want it to be that. X, I think, intentionally in another way, which is, he just broke it, you know, he just like took the thing and used it for his own purposes.
Super successfully, by the way. Like, to briefly give credit where credit is due. Like, I got a bunch of crap from people after the election, because we've said many times how stupid a purchasing decision Twitter was, which I would also remind you, Elon Musk also agrees with that fact. He tried very hard to not purchase it, but it like in a certain way of thinking about it, boy, was buying Twitter a good move for Elon Musk, who is now just the shadow president of the United States.
I totally think that's debatable. I think he spent a lot of money and he got a bunch of votes and he did a bunch of rallies and he gave away $1 million to sign people to a petition that may or may not have been constituted. Who knows? I'm going to make the X algorithm just do whatever I want. Debatable. I think I don't know that the average swing voter got swayed by the amount of garbage on X.
No, but he's now the second most powerful person in America.
Right, but did X make him that? Fair. Or did his money spent, like, literally handing novelty checks out on stages? Like, I don't know the answer to that question.
Yeah.
But the broader point I'm making, the second part is, these are now creator platforms. That's what they are. They're closed. Insanely closed. X will de-rank your posts if you put links in them. So will Threads.
Yep.
because they're algorithmic, they're designed to promote engagement on the platform themselves. So they are just very closed. They're little walled gardens that you're supposed to be in. And even if Threads finishes its ActivityPub integration, even if it all works out the way that I would very much want it to work out, it's still closed. Like, it's designed to be a closed ecosystem.
And I think crucially that thing has kind of calcified since really the last time we talked about this, right? Like, Threads has now been telling us what Threads is for long enough that the smart thing to do is just believe it, right? Yeah. Everybody is out here being like, Adam Mosseri, please, dear God, let me just see the reverse cron of all the people I follow. If Adam Mosseri and Mark Zuckerberg and the Threads team wanted to do that, they would have. Like, this is where we are. The thing you're describing is what Threads is going to be for the foreseeable future. And I think, to me, that is what is underlying a lot of this, is there is this sense of like, Threads was new and it was early and we weren't sure what it was going to be. And they seem to have these big, interesting, ambitious goals. None of that counts in its favor anymore. Like, Threads is Threads now. And we should take the thing for what it is.
And it's going to grow however it grows, right? It is growing at some rate, but it is very much meant to be a creator platform. And I think that's how they're going to think about it. Blue Sky, for whatever it will become, is way smaller, as you noted, David. It's 15 million users just today as we're talking, but it's designed to be an open platform. Links are not suppressed in the algorithm. It is leading you towards RevCron feeds by default. There are algorithms you can get that sort the fire hose in different ways. That's a part of their monetization strategy, is actually to sell you algorithms, which is like fascinating.
Yes.
The moderation is, quote, composable. So you can tell it how you want to moderate the feeds. The protocol, I think, is wonkier, right? Like, there isn't another Blue Sky server yet.
Right.
So everything is happening on one server. You can kind of set your own domain name so you can like make it feel a little bit different. But eventually, when there is one, the idea of following someone from another server is not as political as it is on Mastodon. Like, you're not getting at these like server-wide block lists. Like, it's just not how it works.
Right.
All the federation is at the user level. So if you're like, I don't like this Blue Sky server that I'm on, I can take my whole account and take it to another server, because that's the element that is moderated is the user account. Whereas on ActivityPub and Mastodon and whatever else, the thing that is federated is the servers.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So like, if the Verge.mastodon existed, that would be the thing that is federated. And you could be like, I hate you, Neil, and like leave and go to mastodon.com or whatever. On Blue Sky, it's your account is the thing that moves around.
Right.
And you can take that from server to server at will, kind of.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's the thing. Blue Sky, like I said, got a lot right, but I think that is the thing it got most right. And I think is the thing that is proving to be the hardest about the Fediverse and this kind of whole universe, is nobody can figure out who you are, like in a sort of meaningful way. Like, what is my username and identity and profile is actually like a crucially important part of this entire system. And it is the most complicated thing going in ActivityPub and Mastodon. And Blue Sky, it is like central, and they've done a bunch of really smart stuff. And like, your username is also just a URL. You can just type your username into a bar and it will load up your profile. Like, that stuff is powerful. And I think is a big win. Like you said, Blue Sky desperately needs a second thing, because it is currently exactly as open as Facebook. Right? Like, it has a bunch of big ideas about being open, and it just isn't right now. And they've got to build the next thing. But a big part of this, honestly, is I believe Blue Sky is telling the truth much more than I believe Threads is telling the truth about where they want to go.
Yeah. And Adam Mosseri, again, very direct. We don't want to do news. It's more trouble than it's worth.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you have in this election, you had an X platform that was explicitly showcasing one view of America, explicitly in the tank for one candidate.
Yep.
And then the alternative was nothing. Right. The alternative platform in that style of social media was, we don't want this here. And that's a weird imbalance, right? Because all the people who were leaving X were going to a platform where that stuff was not there the way that it was on the other platform, certainly not as overt. And I think now what you're getting is, okay, that didn't work either. And I think now what you're getting is a bunch of people saying, well, this didn't feel right. Let's go to a platform where we can make it what we want.
Right.
And Blue Sky literally has the tools built into it to make it what you want. They have the APIs are there. The availability of just the fire hose of posts is there. And people can build tools. There's already Deck Blue, I think it's called, is the tweet deck for Blue Sky. It like already exists.
Yep.
There it is. You can just use it. So there's something really interesting happening here where you have kind of like a VHS beta situation inside of federated social media, open social media. But a lot of the smart people that I talk to are like, this isn't going to matter at the end of the day because there's software that bridges between all of these things. And it, actually, the best outcome is for Mastodon and Blue Sky and Threads and whatever else part of the Fediverse, Ghost, to all just be able to talk to each other, and the protocol shouldn't matter as much. I don't know if we'll get there. I think that's a long way away. I think people are still trying to make their specific protocols work, and you got to make technology bets.
Right.
So you got to start with something. But I can see a future where, yeah, actually everything does work together way better. And if you what you want to do is pick the creator platform, you can go pick the creator platform. But if what you want is the more open, here's where we share a bunch of links and talk about them platform, that is also available to you.
Yeah, I think the outcome you're describing, I think, is pretty clearly the best version of this story. And it was always going to take a long time, right? Like we've been talking a lot about the Fediverse and ActivityPub for the last couple of years. And I've reached a point where I'm sort of itchy that it hasn't happened yet. And it's like, okay, maybe this just isn't going to happen. And then it's like, okay, every time I talk to people, they're like, everyone who works on this has been working on this longer than you realize and is aware of the fact that this is going to take a long time, right? So it's like, none of this gets built in a day. I also think these things are in some ways getting further apart. And that's the part that gets problematic, right? Like every day Threads doesn't build out really strong ActivityPub integration, it gets harder to build really strong ActivityPub integration. And every day Threads gets more successful, building that stuff well becomes less and less compelling, right? Like Threads as a powerful closed creator platform could be very successful. It is already very successful. It's just like, there comes a time when being a good steward of an open ecosystem is not as exciting as it once was when you were teeny tiny and kind of needed that ecosystem. I still believe the people who work there are serious when they say they want to do that, but that doesn't get you very far.
Let me make the defense of the Threads team, not of Meta, but specifically the challenge facing the Threads team.
Sure.
Because I think they've done something here that is smart, interesting at least, but potentially smart. If you look at Blue Sky, they built all their features and they have struggled to scale them to even 15 million users, which is why they had invites at the beginning, which is why they had the thing called the hell thread, where like all you could see was one insane thread that was going crazy every day. But they built the complete product and they scaled it. And that is, and that's how most people build things. The Threads team is taking the approach to ActivityPub where they're adding one piece of federation at scale immediately. So they're like, okay, you can now see who follows you in the Fediverse. All 275 million of you can see this at scale. It works. Okay, now we're going to let you see who liked it. We're not going to let you reply yet. Now we're going to let the next thing happen. And they're adding sort of like one piece of the stack at the scale of the whole platform, which is just a different way of going about it. But the fact that the loops haven't closed yet, I think, is what's driving everybody crazy.
Right. And I agree with you.
Someone replies to you from the Fediverse and you can't write back to them. It's like, what is the point of this?
Right. That's actually like an actively bad experience.
Yeah.
If you're someone who is paying attention to protocol development, that is like exciting. But the thing where somebody replies to me,
everybody.
This is what I mean, right? But it's like, what it actually looks like as a user is I see a thing that asks me periodically if I want to keep sharing to the Fediverse that I have to figure out what that means and decide. And then I get a bunch of people who are like concerned trolling me into sharing to the Fediverse. And then people reply to me, but I can't reply to them. And if I like what they reply to, they don't see it. Like, it's bad product until it works. And I think the longer it goes being bad product, the less compelling it becomes kind of to everybody involved. I'm still very hopeful. And I do still think it's the right answer, but I worry increasingly, like the reason I think this Blue Sky thing has been such good news is I think Threads really didn't seem like it was going to have meaningful competition there for a while. And I think the idea that Blue Sky, even if it doesn't like federate in the way that we want, even if it doesn't become this sort of big, beautiful, open thing, like competition is good. And the idea that Threads was just going to sort of walk away with this because we all wanted some other place to post text was bad. And so I'm like, I'm all for competition, even if the right answer is like, what did Jay call it in your interview? It was like competition and cooperation.
Co-opetition.
Co-opetition. Yeah, it's good. That's what we should root for.
All right, we should take a break. We'll be right back.
Support for The Vergecast comes from The Washington Post. With so much happening in the world, it can be challenging to distinguish between what's real and what's not. Having a trustworthy source to help you separate fact from fiction is essential. That's why you might want to check out The Washington Post. Right now, you can go to washingtonpost.com/verge to subscribe for just 50 cents per week for your first year. The Washington Post offers substantial and considered coverage on a wide array of topics. The paper can be a great place to find thoughtful stories about Capitol Hill, the economy, climate change, and so much more. I'm a subscriber to The Washington Post, and my favorite thing about it is their clean homepage. I can quickly get caught up on the news every time. Now is the time to sign up for The Washington Post. Go to washingtonpost.com/verge to subscribe for just 50 cents per week for your first year. That's 80% off their typical offer, so it's truly a steal. Once again, that's washingtonpost.com/verge to subscribe for just 50 cents per week for your first year. Support for the show comes from a new season of Crucible Moments, a podcast from Sequoia Capital. Did you know that YouTube started as a dating site? Probably not, because it didn't go well. So how did the company pivot from that failure to become the household name it is today? On this season of Crucible Moments, they're giving you an inside look at that story and more, offering an unvarnished history of some of tech's influential companies told by the founders themselves. You can hear how losing $35 million led the founder of ServiceNow to start his own company, or how a Reddit founder ended up returning to the company just to save the site from itself. Hosted by Roelof Botha of Sequoia, Crucible Moments provides a behind-the-scenes look at some of the most tumultuous and defining milestones in tech history. He connects with the founders and they reflect on those pivotal inflection points and how sometimes those moments of turmoil become moments of triumph. Tune in to Season 2 of Crucible Moments now. You can catch up on Season 1 at CrucibleMoments.com or wherever you listen to podcasts. Support for the Vergecast comes from Fundrise. Nearly every major tech company on the S&P 500 was once funded by venture capital firms. The hard truth, however, is that the biggest venture funds are almost entirely funded by institutional investors. So unless you knew a guy who knew a guy, you and 99% of individual investors did not get to participate in the pre-IPO growth of any of those blue chip companies. And now with the AI revolution, that's happening again. Almost all the biggest names in AI are still private, just out of reach of your portfolio. But the Fundrise Innovation Fund is changing that. It's a more than $125 million fund. It holds some of the most exciting pre-IPO tech companies in the world, and it's designed specifically for individual investors. This time, you can get in early at fundrise.com/vergecast. Carefully consider investment material before investing, including objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. This and other information can be found in the Innovation Fund's prospectus at fundrise.com/innovation. This is a paid advertisement.
We're back. If I was starting The Verge cold today, you can already see it in our design, what I want it to be, but if I was starting it cold today, the open source licenses of these various platforms aside, because they're complicated, I would be like, we're starting a server and you can follow our feeds. Like, I'm just going to post all day on my server and we'll have some ads on it or whatever.
Yeah.
And if you want to follow my posts, you can follow them. But we're going to own this and we're going to curate a bunch of stuff from these other places using ActivityPub. So if you want to see the best of what we're looking at, you can see it here. You can already see what we're doing with QuickPost. We've talked about federating our site quite a bit. Like, you can add all these ideas together, right? Your Vergecast listeners, you're smart. You can see what I'm trying to do here.
Yeah.
It's harder when you have a giant website with 13 years of archives and static site CSS features that animate and blow up your phone when you scroll, to be honest.
Yeah.
Some of our old ones were, the technology was not ready yet. We have a big archive that we got to deal with. But if I was starting one today, I would be like, the thing to do is lean into federated distribution and to actually own your own distribution, not be like, I'm going to start a website and make SEO content for the Google robot, or right. I'm going to start a YouTube channel and eventually get buffeted around by this algorithm until I have to make a video about how mad I am at YouTube, which everyone does. That's when you get your wings. It's actually lean into the next phase of what the internet looks like. And that's why it's like, which of these protocols is going to win? Because I think there's a bunch of businesses that are sort of like waiting to start once it's clear like how to do it, but nobody knows yet. Like there's just a bunch of this foundational work that is still just inching towards a finish line.
Yeah. Well, and it's weird because I think we're at a moment now where at a protocol level, ActivityPub is way ahead, right? Just in terms of sort of adoption and belief. It is the one that everybody who is making bets is betting on at this moment. But in terms of actual places people are, Blue Sky is winning. I think it is going to keep growing like this because it made the bet that what people want is Twitter minus the mess. And I think, truthfully, one of the things that I have come to feel over the last couple of years is like, Twitter was a disaster of a company, run poorly in so many ways, and also was kind of like a magical thing that really accomplished a lot of goals that are hard to accomplish in one place. And we're seeing that now, right? Like what all of these companies are doing is sort of pulling pieces apart of Twitter and doing one or two of those things well. No one is trying to do full Twitter. And frankly, you probably shouldn't. Like, was Twitter good for the world? Who knows? But the thing where it was like a place to hang out with your friends and also a place to discover creators, but also a place to get like government information at incredible speed is like, Twitter was central in our culture in a way that I think we still kind of underrate now. And nothing out there is even close to getting to that.
But to be clear, this is what I'm saying. It would be better if that was reconstructed, but actually the government agencies owned their own servers. So the next time a billionaire shows up and breaks it, we're not like, where do I get earthquake information from?
Right.
Like that's a real thing that has occurred in the past several years.
Yeah.
Right. The next time someone shows up and breaks it, we're not like, where will independent creators post their apologies? Which is a real question that was asked this week. Uh-huh. It's just a lot of that. That's like, oh, we should actually just own our own tools. Like in a meaningful way, we should own our own tools. Yep. And I know I'm always ranting and raving about this because we have our own website. And it's the last website on earth and all, but you look at who gets to control speech in America and it's like three guys.
Yeah.
Like at the end of the day, it's not the government. That's bad. It's like three guys. And they can come and go. Like very clearly they can come and go. I think one of the miracles of Twitter, and you are free to disagree with me about this, but by and large, they got the balance of moderation correct.
Yeah, I agree with that.
That platform was lively. Everybody was mad. It like sort of exactly the right volume. Jack Dorsey was bizarrely the sort of right personality to go sit in front of Congress and just accept blame.
With a beard in his kitchen.
Yeah, right. He was just
never forget that.
Yeah. He's like, I suck. I want to be clear. I agree with you that I suck. Like, I'm sad that I did this. The Mark Zuckerberg quote about Twitter is, it was a clown car that fell into a gold mine. And they've dismantled all that and they've turned the knobs on moderation and algorithms. And you can just see, okay, this is a thing that can happen.
Right.
In America, at least for the next 8 weeks, we have a First Amendment that prevents the government from passing content moderation rules that let the government level set. So what you need is competition. I'm actually, we should not talk about Trump too much at all, but I'm confident the next chairman of the FCC is going to be Brendan Carr. Brendan Carr does not think that the First Amendment should keep the FCC out of content moderation. It's like a real thing that he's talked about.
Yeah.
And if he becomes a chairman, we will talk about him a lot. So I'll set that aside. But up until now, who gets to make the rules about what you see is guys.
Yeah.
Mostly just guys.
It's just dudes.
And Sherry Redstone.
Yeah.
And I'm hopeful that this moment where people are like, screw it, we'll go to Blue Sky. It's fun here. Points to a future where, if not the protocols push people towards a better outcome, the fact that everybody can still vote with their attention points to the better outcome.
Yeah, I agree.
Like Twitter is not, like Elon's mistake with Twitter has always been believing it's a monopoly. And I think right now, you can just look at the numbers. People are leaving Twitter to join Blue Sky. And like, that means it's not a monopoly.
Yeah, I tend to think all of this is going to be a blip in the direction of something else, right? And it's like, what we've learned so far is that leaving Twitter is harder for a lot of people than we think. Everybody who goes to a new platform loves to talk about the new platform. And then once the novelty of the thing dies down, it's very hard to know what to do, right? Like, I feel like to some extent we had the same feelings about Mastodon in the early days. And it was like, maybe this is the thing. It has different values.
I want to be clear. I never had that feeling.
No?
1000% never had that feeling about Mastodon.
Why do you have it about Blue Sky?
I think, you know, that Steve Jobs quote about Microsoft and taste. Mm. I hope listeners know what I'm talking about. There's this very famous Steve Jobs video. It's like young Steve Jobs, and it's in his wilderness period after he got fired from Apple, and he was at Next, and he was a little more bombastic than usual because he was constantly trying to sell the next thing and prove himself. Whatever. I'm just contextualizing the quote. They asked about Microsoft, and he said, the problem with Microsoft is that they have no taste. And he looked very pleased with himself, and he said, I don't mean that in a small way. I mean that in a big way. Right? The company doesn't have taste. It doesn't have a sense of what it is doing or how it should feel.
Yeah.
And I've always felt that Mastodon lacks that particular kind of taste. Like, it is software. Threads has no taste in a big way. I like the people who are making Threads. I've talked to them. They've shown up at Verge parties. We threw a funeral for Twitter. The Threads team was there. It was great. They're cool. As a company, Meta does not have taste. There's a reason Mark Zuckerberg is like wearing Roman fonts on his shirts,
yeah,
and signing deals with Ray-Ban, because they need to buy taste. They need to demonstrate taste because it does not exist in their products.
They've also decided several times that having taste is dangerous.
Yep.
And the only way to get as big as Meta has gotten is to not have taste. Like, they made a business decision to not have any taste.
I challenge anyone to open the Facebook app and be like, I sense taste here.
Right.
Blue Sky largely is a clone of Twitter. So, like, I'm not imputing taste onto that. Twitter had Twitter had famous designers. Mm-hmm. Like, important parts of culture came out of the user base of Twitter, filtered through Twitter's designers and product people, and then out into the world, right? The at mention, the hashtag, like, all this stuff is stuff Twitter took from its community, productized, put design around, and then gave to the world. Pull to Refresh was a third party.
Yeah.
Twitter app Tweety. Mechanic, yeah. That Twitter bought, and they signed a patent pledge so that anybody could use it. So they have a patent on it, but they won't use it. But that is like part of the culture now. Like, pull to refresh is like an app mechanic.
Yeah.
It is like, actually, if you like spend a lot of time thinking about it, has led to an entire culture. Blue Sky's design is a lot of copies, but you can see it in the people who are making it, that they have taste. They have a very clear sense about what the product should be and how it should make people feel. And that is why they talk about composable moderation. That's why Jay's mm-hmm. go-to response when you ask her about what does that mean is, I have a custom feed that just shows me moss, like kinds of moss that I like. Like, they're weirdos and posters. And I think that's why they attracted a bunch of weirdos and posters. I think that's why they've leaned into being weirdos and posters and like having that community there. I think that's why a culture has been built, like, slowly in the way that cultures on platforms get built. I don't know if any of it will be successful, but when you ask, you're like, what's the difference? I just think about that quote. It's like, oh, they don't have taste. And I mean that in a big way.
Yeah. No, I agree with that in large ways. I think the challenge there is, like, do you know the 99-1 rule? I don't know where it came from, but it's now like a truism of all sort of social posting platforms, that 90% of people are the audience, right? They never post, they never do anything, they're just there to look. 9% of people are kind of light interactors. They might post a little bit, they like things, they reply to things, whatever, but they're sort of around and making their presence known. And then 1% of people do the vast majority of the things that the other 99% of people are there for. The problem I think we have right now is that Blue Sky is doing a really good job of appealing to that 1%. Like the people, or maybe it's the 9%. I don't know. The people who like live to post love Blue Sky, and Blue Sky is built for those people, and it is fun and it is exciting and the vibes are good and you want to participate. But that is a small percentage of the thing. The 90% is who Meta builds for better than any other company on planet Earth, right? Like, that is what has made Instagram successful. It is what has made Facebook successful. The Meta builds platforms that you come to and do nothing, but you come to them over and over and over and over again. And so you look at ads. And so Meta makes a ton of money.
But that's why Meta has to go to weird algorithmic feeds where you open Instagram and none of your friends are there anymore. And it's just creators bootlegging video clips of 80s movies.
Right. But so this is the thing, right? Can you build a place that is both fun to post and full of good stuff every time you open the app? I'm honestly not sure that it is. And I think, again, we go back to like the magic of Twitter. Twitter at its peak did both of those things. You could have a Twitter experience that felt like lively and real time and interactive and exciting. And you could also show up and see what The Rock was talking about. Like none of these things that we have now do both of those things. None of them.
All right, let me point a few things out just because I know the Vergecast listeners are screaming in their cars right now, weaving all over the road. One, any criticism of Elon's handling of Twitter is not praise for the previous administration,
No. Who
by and large did a bad job.
Clown car goldmine.
Right.
So could not agree more.
Two, they never made any money, even though they had whatever success you're describing. And three, the service at its peak was like 300 some million users.
Yeah, but it was the single most, cable news was people reading tweets. Like,
yeah,
it just was. Like there was a decade in our culture that was mediated by Twitter in a like very real way. That if you wanted to share information with a lot of people, no matter who you were, a famous person, a government, a company, you went on Twitter. You just did. And that it's still true because the vestiges of that are still so powerful. And nothing coming up now looks like it has a chance to replace that.
Yeah. And I don't think it should. I'm just going to keep coming back to that. I think it would be better if we all owned our own distribution or we built a distribution network that allowed people to come and go more freely. That's what the web is. Until Google search became this hegemon that sort of made the web look exactly how it's going to look. Like that's the web. That's RSS. I think we're on the cusp of doing it. That's podcasts. By and large, that is.
Listen, we've made it this far and I haven't brought up Google Reader yet. And so I won't.
All right. We gotta get off this.
Now wait, can I just read you some user numbers before we go? I went and pulled the user numbers for all of these platforms and I just found them fascinating. And I just want to read them all out loud because it's useful context for everything we've talked about. So Threads, as we mentioned, as of October 30th, when Meta reported earnings, has 275 million active users. What that means is always hard to know. How companies measure these things is different across the board in all ways, but that's the number they reported, and they're getting 1 million signups a day. Blue Sky, today, Wednesday, as we're recording this, passed 15 million total users. Yesterday, on Tuesday the 12th, had 798,142 unique posters, which is people who actually posted a thing, which I love as a metric, and I think everyone should do it, and 990,464 unique likers. So that's a decent like balance of who's here and who's doing stuff. Mastodon, this is the one that really surprised me and why I wanted to do this, has 9,034,753 total users as of today. 886,711 active users. Brutal. Like Mastodon, and you go look at this, a lot of this stuff comes from like open APIs that these things have. They just ping every day. You can see how they go. Mastodon had that big bump, real momentum after the Twitter thing happened with Elon Musk, and it had a moment and it just lost all of that momentum. And it has settled back slightly higher than it was before. It went from like 500,000 active users every day to 886,000 active users every day, which is not nothing, but like that's also not momentum. 2 years later, like Mastodon just kind of lost it. And I feel like right now we got a ton of people who are asking us like, oh, where should I go? And I feel like the only two answers I would even think about at this moment are Blue Sky and Threads. And I would tell you like, go to Blue Sky is more fun and Threads is easier, is I guess the place I'd land.
I don't even know if it's easier. The Blue Sky app is the number one app in the App Store today, mostly because, speaking of cable news, Chris Hayes brought it up on MSNBC last night and said, I really like Blue Sky. And they had a bump. The Blue Sky devs were pointing out that this made the line go up. So it's the number one app in the store today. People are leaving. The thing of Blue Sky is that right now is it's self-contained. There isn't another app protocol server. It's on Blue Sky. And I feel like the Mastodon number is a little bit confusing because all those people on Mastodon have the ability to see content from Threads.
Right, true.
Because that is the promise of federation. So it kind of doesn't matter if that number stagnates as long as the Threads number goes up because you're still being able to follow Threads users, depending on your Mastodon server. And this is the complexity, it's all weird. Right. But if your Mastodon server interoperates with Threads, as long as Threads numbers keep going up, you have the ability to follow and interact with all those people, or you will over time. So there's some promise of federation here that I think skews these numbers. But the one thing that is clear is that a smaller number of bad people are interacting at higher rates on Twitter.
Yes.
X. It's weird. It's a weird time, but I think the shakeup is going to be good. I think it is time to think about distribution on the internet in way different ways, particularly as the creator platforms just shove creators and influencers around and like start adding. I opened my Instagram yesterday and it was like, do you want to make an AI of yourself to talk to your fans?
Ugh.
And I, you know,
you super did it.
I was like, yeah, sure do. To ask them for money, make sure that they pay me money. That is a response to creators feeling burned out. That's why that button is there. It's because creators have complained about it for so long. They're burned out doing all the things they have to do. And the platforms are just going to be more extractive. And if just some handful of, I don't know, creators, publications, whatever mixture of things is like, we're actually going to make this a little more open, I think we'll be in a much better place.
I agree. Also, The Verge is on Blue Sky now. Go follow us on Blue Sky.
We are. And we got starter pack. We got the whole thing.
Yeah.
Open distribution. All right. We got to take a break. We're going to come back with a new segment we call Show and Tell. We'll be right back.
Support for the Vergecast comes from Life360. There can be a lot of stress during the holiday season. Parties, family, work functions. It goes on and on. And that stress can make it difficult to keep track of where everyone in your family will be at a given time. But the holidays should be relaxing. So whether you're staying close to home this winter or traveling abroad, Life360 can help you ease some of those holiday jitters. With the Life360 app, you can keep track of where everyone is in real time to streamline family communication and coordination. And you can have all that peace of mind in the palm of your hand. It's all about safety, because everyone in your Life360 circle gets access to crash detection, roadside assistance, and SOS with emergency dispatch. That way, you can get the details on their day-to-day with real-time speed monitoring, 30-day location history, and low battery alerts. Make everyday family life better. Visit life360.com or download the app today and use code VERGE to get 1 month of the gold package for free. That's life360.com, code VERGE. Support for the VergeCast comes from AT&T. What does it feel like to get the new iPhone 16 Pro with AT&T Next Up Anytime? It's like when you first pick up those tongs and you're now the one running the grill. It's indescribable, like something you've never felt before. All the mouth-watering anticipation of new possibilities. Whether that's making a perfect cheeseburger or treating your family to a grilled baked potato, which you know will forever change the way they look at potatoes. With AT&T Next Up Anytime, you can feel this way again and again. Learn how to get the new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence on AT&T and the latest iPhone every year with AT&T Next Up Anytime. AT&T, connecting changes everything. Apple Intelligence coming fall 2024 with Siri and device language set to U.S. English. Some features and languages will be coming over the next year. $0 offer may not be available on future iPhones. Next Up Anytime feature may be discontinued at any time, subject to change. Additional fees, terms, and restrictions apply. See AT&T.com/iPhone for details. Support for the Vergecast comes from Stripe. Payment management software isn't something your customers think about that often. They see your product, they want to buy it, and then they buy it. That's about as complex as it gets, but under the hood of that process, there are a lot of really complicated things happening that have to go right in order for that sale to go through. Stripe handles the complexity of financial infrastructure, offering a seamless experience for business owners and their customers. For example, Stripe can make sure that your customers see their currency and preferred payment method when they shop, so checking out never feels like a chore. Stripe is a payments and billing platform supporting millions of businesses around the world, including companies like Uber, BMW, and DoorDash. Stripe has helped countless startups and established companies alike reach their growth goals, make progress on their missions, and reach more customers globally. The platform offers a suite of specialized features and tools to power businesses of all sizes, like Stripe Billing, which makes it easy to handle subscription-based charges, invoicing, and all recurring revenue management needs. Learn how Stripe helps companies of all sizes make progress at Stripe.com. That's Stripe.com to learn more. Stripe, make progress.
All right, we're back. Kylie Robinson is here. Hi, Kylie.
Hello.
Welcome to the Vergecast. Have we been on the show together yet?
No, I don't think so.
Well,
spooky.
There was a reason. I don't know. That's so rude. You're here. We're going to do a new segment. We're calling Show and Tell. Are we actually calling it Show and Tell, David?
We're calling it that until someone calls or emails with a better name. We've had very good luck in the past letting smarter people than us name things for us. So please, if you have a better idea, call the hotline, send us an email, name this segment for us.
All right. So here's what we're going to do during the presumptively named Show and Tell. All of us are going to bring one story to the table. We're going to say what it is, and then we're going to talk about it. But it has to be good.
Oh, God.
So we're putting David on the spot first. David, okay. What's your story this week?
I feel like we have to talk about the Square iPad. You mentioned it briefly at the top, but this is the only thing I can think about. So we have to talk about this now. So we've been hearing rumors and reporting for a long time that Apple was really interested in getting into the smart home. Mark Gurman at Bloomberg, who is better at reporting what Apple is going to do than everybody, had a big story this week about what this thing is going to be. Apple is essentially building a smart home controller that is going to live inside of your house. Can I just read you several sentences from this article? And I would like you to tell me what device it sounds like I am describing.
For a segment called Show and Tell, I feel like this is a little backwards in that you're reading and then I'm describing what I think you've shown me. But let's go ahead. Yeah,
it's a tell and show. It's fine. Don't worry about it. Other people are going to name this for us. So Mark Gurman says, it's about the size of two iPhones side by side with a thick edge around the display. There's also a camera at the top front, a rechargeable built-in battery, and internal speakers. Apple plans to offer it in silver and black options. If you're already thinking, gosh, I know what David is describing, I have more for you. The product has a touch interface. The company expects most people to use their voice to interact with the device, relying on the Siri digital assistant and Apple Intelligence. The product will be marketed as a way to control home appliances, chat with Siri, and hold intercom sessions with FaceTime. It will also be loaded with Apple apps, including ones for web browsing, listening to news updates, and playing music. Users will be able to access their notes and calendar information, and the device can turn into a slideshow display for their photos. Do you know what device I'm describing?
Is it a $329 iPad?
It's an iPad. Apple is going to make an iPad, and they're going to sell it to you to use in your house. Let me read you the thing that is actually new and is actually interesting. If you just imagine an iPad, Mark Gurman writes this in his story. He says, Apple has designed different attachments for the device, including ones that affix the screens onto walls like a classic home security panel. There will be bases with additional speakers that can be placed in the kitchen, on a nightstand, or on a desk. Apple imagines the FaceTime feature being used while cooking or for video conferencing during work meetings. A, still just an iPad. It sounds very much like the thing Apple is going to make is a bad iPad that it wants to sell you lots of for your house. B, an accessory ecosystem of cool new things that you can add to your iPad just by docking it on these different docks around your house is a kick-ass idea that Apple should totally do. Just not with a stupid 6-inch bad iPad. I'm like losing my mind about this thing.
I just want to say out loud, I've said this many times before, Apple is horrible at accessory ecosystems, actually. It's just a thing. It's just reality. How many smart keyboard covers are there for the iPad today?
Oh, I agree.
Zero.
Like, Belkin has become like the official Apple accessory maker because Apple either can't or won't do it itself.
Well, Belkin is owned by Foxconn. So you get the idea that every now and again, an Apple designer goes in the Foxconn factory and is like, I have a number of ideas. Like, there's something real there, I find. But great. And a third-party ecosystem of like weird docks and adapters, everybody wants this to exist for every Apple product, and they just don't.
Sure. Like, but like, I just have to keep reading. The newly designed operating system will also include a customizable home screen where users can run widgets for checking stock tickers, the weather, and appointments. That's an iPad. Or they can configure the screen to highlight key home controls. iPad. There will also be a dock for quickly launching favorite apps and a home screen grid of software icons. It's an iPad.
Look, in all fairness,
they did iPad again.
Mark Bloomberg is a very traditional news organization, and Kerman has to hit a word count.
Also, this is all very good reporting from Gurman. The fact that this is very good reporting. It's just Apple is just going to make an iPad again, and they're going to try to sell it to you as a new thing because it can dock on a speaker.
Yeah.
That's nothing. Make the iPad better.
They're going to cut down the interface, right, to make it more smart homey. You're going to let people talk to, you know, the presumably smarter Siri. That's a thing that could happen.
During development, Apple discussed launching an app store as part of the device, but it recently decided to exclude this feature, at least in the initial version. It's an iPad without the app store, so it's just worse.
I'm just going to point out that a couple weeks ago, we had Joanna Stern on the show, and we talked about garage door openers for 5 hours. And Apple's dreams of making a smart home product are going to run headfirst into the reality of smart home products.
Yes.
That's what's going to happen.
Which is?
It's impossible.
Fascinating.
That's the whole answer.
That really is the whole answer.
Very smart people get tripped up at whether the smart part of the light bulb should be in the light bulb or the switch. And there are religious arguments for both. Mm-hmm. There are good reasons to do. In my own home, I have both.
Yeah.
I have smart light bulbs and I have smart switches. And no one in my family that literally I'm trying to illuminate knows why or how any of it works.
Yeah.
And so you put the thing on the wall and you're like, now your house is smart. You end up having to tell a bunch of consumers where a bunch of other computers in their houses have to go.
Yeah.
And that just falls, it just falls flat immediately.
So would you guys not do this though? This is not something, all I'm thinking as you say this is, don't hate the player, hate the game. There's going to be a dozen people in this office who buy this. It feels like it's just going to happen.
Sure. But if you're Apple, you have this tablet lineup that is very mature and full of identity crises. And what if instead you just took the thing and said, now here's a dock that makes it have an always on screen. And thus you can control all the things you can still control from your iPad. Like it's such a tiny leap from an iPad to this. I think the reason you don't do it if you're Apple is because you can sell a bad iPad a lot cheaper than you can sell a good iPad.
Yeah.
And so they're going to make a bad iPad and stick it to your wall. Fine. That there's also, Gurman has been reporting that the next version of it is going to have a robotic arm and cost $1,000. Like, sure, wow. That's all fine and good. But I think there is a really interesting case to be made that you could turn an iPad, which is already for most people, kind of statistically speaking, like a homebound device. It is a thing that lives on your bedside table or on your couch or on your coffee table. Like, it's not as portable a thing as it maybe is presumed to be in a lot of ways. You could just turn that up a little bit and turn it into something really cool and powerful with this accessory ecosystem. But instead, Apple is going to reinvent the entire wheel in a way that just feels ridiculous to me.
I'm excited for you to buy an iPad that you stick to your wall, David.
Yep.
I think you're going to love it. You're going to love talking to Siri and be like, Siri, do this automation. And then Siri's not going to work. And you're like, what is the answer? Then you're going to Google it. And the answer for some reason is going to be restarting your iPhone. Which is 100% the Apple Home story.
A big part of this feels like what you do when you build all of this other AI stuff, like the App Intents stuff that Apple is working on with Siri, this new Siri, all the Apple Intelligence stuff. And you go, what is any of this actually useful for? This is the same thing, by the way, that Google did with Google Assistant and Amazon did with Alexa. And you realize, oh, it's just, you can turn off two sets of lights at once instead of one set of lights. And that Apple is running directly towards that and nowhere else.
I do want to call out the number of listeners who responded to our Joanna conversation on garage door openers, in which she said Craig Federighi uses Siri to open his garage door, by pointing out that there is 0% chance that Craig Federighi has an Apple home and instead definitely has a custom Crestron home automation system.
Yeah, oh, agreed.
The emails we got that were like, you all understand that there's a custom, that this man has a Crestron sister. Anyhow, all right. You've told. Do I give you a score? 7.
Kylie. I'm going for 7 points.
I'm leaving now. It's the meanest thing you've ever said to me. Jesus.
It's a new segment. We're figuring out how it works. All right, Kylie, what do you have
for us? Oh my God. It's going to be hard to top.
A 7?
No, bad iPad. Well, now I'm talking about scaling laws, which are really interesting. Everyone's reporting this week that scaling laws are failing. So what that is just put more compute and more data into an LLM, and it will get bigger, better, smarter. And everyone has the same training data, which is the internet, the entire internet, and all of our work. So they have all that. They're all building sort of the same thing. And they are all finding, Google, OpenAI, Anthropic, that it is not working anymore, that they are not getting better than their last generation of models. And they're all pissing their pants about it. That's the story this week.
Yeah.
I think this is, I keep thinking about that tweet, which is like, you know, the haters said I couldn't do it. And they were right. Great call from the haters. I think all of them. I think all of the AI skeptics are like, yeah, we told you.
Yeah.
We told you that this wasn't something you could scale infinitely. So yeah, I don't think it's like doomsday, like it's over for AI, but still it's interesting that they're all sort of frustrated that they can't make that giant next leap. And it costs so much money. So if they want to release something that costs so much money for people to use, it's got to be way better. And it's just not.
So the idea here is, okay, we made GPT-4, yeah, but training on the entire internet. We'll get more data, which was always confusing to me where the more data would come from.
Yes. Synthetic data.
So we'll make some fake AI data.
Yes.
We'll train an even bigger model, and that one will necessarily be smarter.
Yes.
And that just hasn't worked out.
And it hasn't worked out. It does not appear that any of them are going to be more capable than the last. So that means, you know, for instance, I believe it was reported that O1 was helping train the next generation of OpenAI's GPT models, but that has become a problem because then, you know, it just gets confused by synthetic data. It's not high quality data. So yeah, they're all running into that same issue. And that means that there's going to have to be some like research breakthrough that gets them to that next step that they don't currently have. And there's just tons of money riding on this for them to figure it out. So I think they're all, again, pissing their pants over it.
As one of the haters, I definitely feel like I should say I told
this
you so.
So exposes to be something, Kylie, that you've been saying to us and on the Vergecast for forever, which is there has been this ongoing line from all of these AI companies that it's like, we're going to do a model, and we're going to do another model, and we're going to do another model, and we're going to do another model, and then it's God. And it's like, well, what is it going to be on the way? And they're like, don't worry about it, God. None of this shit matters because God. We're going to make God, and then you're going to feel dumb for not giving us money. And what happens now is they're going to get to the point where they're like, okay, you've built this thing. It's actually very cool. It's very capable. It can do lots of things. What's it for? What are people going to do with it? And all of these companies are like, emails. We're going to write some bomb emails.
Yes.
And we're like, we are going to be stuck in this, what can you do with this phase for a lot longer than any of these companies would like you to believe.
Well, there's that, but there's just also this week, right? Dario Amodei from Anthropic is telling Lex Fridman that we'll have AGI in like 2 years.
Yes.
Sam Altman, I think in the past couple of weeks, has said on current hardware, we can have AGI, which by the way, means the tech industry should stop. Like if you can make God on NVIDIA's current hardware, we should stop.
Yeah
like, we did it.
We're good.
We did it. We're done.
Let God build the next version of the GPU. Like it'll be here soon.
Totally.
The God processing unit. That's the
if I just put enough H100s in a room, I can have God. To like we should NVIDIA should just slow the fuck down.
Sure.
Right? And there's something very incompatible with in 2 years we'll have AGI. I can build AGI in current hardware, and the bigger models we just trained aren't more capable than the previous models.
Yes.
Is that what's going on?
I've been asked on Vergecast, I think it was Decoder, should we trust them? And I as a journalist am just very skeptical. So Dario's saying, you know, we're going to get AGI, is going to do all these beautiful things. And I mean, they just have to sell products at the end of the day. The Reddit AMA that Sam Altman did recently, where he said, oh, it's really hard to release these things in parallel. We have like such limited compute and it's hard to work on all of these things. But the next big thing I think is going to be agents. It just feels like they're pivoting. They're like, don't look at this. Don't look at this right here. We haven't figured it out. Just don't think about agents. On current hardware, current models, look at that. Please give us money. Don't look at how we are failing to make the next big model. And I don't think we need a next bigger model. I think these companies really enjoyed making these huge leaps from model to model. And if they're capable enough now of achieving some good emails, then fine. They think that they can combine, you know, the GPT series with the O reasoning series and perhaps get AGI. Again, I think all of this is to sell more products and get more money. That has always been my position. So, yeah. I mean,
I just want to read you the quote from Daria.
Please.
If you believe the straight line extrapolation, we'll have artificial general intelligence in 2026 or 2027.
Right.
If line go up forever, I will make God.
Have you guys seen the tweet from the guy? I'm sorry, I don't remember who it is. We'll find it and put it in the show notes. Who was like, he has two pictures of him with his newborn baby and then his baby who's now 3 months old. Yes. And he's like, wild, guys, my baby has doubled in weight in 3 months. At this rate, by his 10th birthday, he'll be 7 trillion pounds. I think about that every single time somebody talks about one of these things. Like, it's really, and people talk about this stuff as if it is guaranteed. Like, you look at Moore's Law, right? And this thing that has, like, governed technological progress for so long. We now take it as truth that everything that grows, grows the same way and forever. And it just doesn't. Like, yeah. There is no guarantee that any of this will work like that just because the way we make semiconductors works like that. It's just not how it works.
Okay, to add to this too, you know how Sam Altman was going across the world trying to get these trillion-dollar data centers built somewhere? Someone give me the money to build these data centers so I can power digital God. There was a story in The Information today that a competitor flew like a crop plane over XAI's data center to figure out how he was cooling those chips because they're so scared about liquid cooling and it's so confusing. And I thought, that's crazy that we're getting to a point where people are just flying, you know, little planes over Elon's data center to figure out how the fuck they can build digital God in the same way. It's just such a funny thing.
The next Mission Impossible movie is just Tom Cruise breaking into a data center to figure out how they power all this stuff.
I think that was the last Mission Impossible. It was the last.
David, what
and it was underwater. You're exactly right. It was that. Oh my God. They did
Fast
that
and Furious in space, man.
By the way, if you look on all the streaming services, they've taken part one off of that movie because it ends on such a garbage cliffhanger that people are mad.
Yeah, they're like, never mind, we're just doing a different one.
It's just
now.
A full movie. I don't know, man. All right, Kyle, you've told.
Yes.
David, I think you have to score this one.
2.5.
God.
But that's out of 3, to be clear.
Sorry, you're so jealous.
We didn't say what our scoring
metric was. We actually didn't say that we were scoring.
Neela gave me a 7 out of 10. I'm giving you a 2.5 out of 3.
Perfect.
And then we'll see. Actually, you get like the Netflix one thumb up, but not the two thumbs up. It's like a score. Like it, but not a love it kind of thing. You know what I mean?
Okay.
So that's your score.
Digital God, David. We can do it on current hardware. I want to say this as directly as I can. If you believe we can build AGI in current hardware, the tech industry should stop. We should just stop doing everything and focus on that one goal so that Digital God can design the next iPhone. But I don't think that's true.
Right.
Like that claim just implies you should stop working and let, you know, AGI do it for you. Please, I beg you, let AGI write about Donald Trump for the next 4 years. It'll everyone can take a break. All right, here's mine. Just the series of words is so silly. Just Eat is selling Grubhub to Wonder.
What?
None of those words make any sense. So Grubhub, as you know, is the delivery service. It's, right. It's like probably the one that you are most familiar with. They bought Seamless a while ago, so it's all the same app.
That was such a New Yorker thing to say, by the way. What, that was Seamless? Grubhub is the one is such a New York-centric
Isn't Grubhub
thing
the one?
To say.
None of these words were in the Bible. This I don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going on.
All right.
It's like in LA, it's just Postmates, but nowhere else. SF is, I think, probably still like a DoorDash town.
DoorDash, yeah.
This is like when you live in New York, it was like, oh, just Seamless it. And it's like, what? That's nothing. That's not a word.
Chicago. When we moved to New York from Chicago. Anyway, it doesn't matter. These are all nonsense words and failing businesses that are just selling each other in different configurations.
Fair.
What I want to get to is they're selling it to a company called Wonder, which is owned by a part owner of the Minnesota Timberwolves and a former Walmart VP. And Wonder's business model is bananas.
Perfect.
He licenses recipes from famous chefs. So you're what? Like, yes.
What?
So Wonder is like a high-end food hall, and it's a ghost kitchen with like famous restaurants logos on the front. So you go in there, and you're like, here's all these like famous local restaurants or like restaurants I've heard of that like celebrities go to.
Mm-hmm.
So Wonder licenses recipes from famous chefs. So you open Wonder and there's Bobby Flay's steak. There's Street Bird by Marcus Samuelson. There is Detroit Brick Pizza. There's all this stuff. DeFaro Pizza, which is like a famous New York pizza place, isn't there? But they don't actually make the food. They license the recipes. And they have one big commissary kitchen that like pre-makes the food.
So good.
And then it goes to the food hall where they, with like steam baths and microwaves, reheat the food and assemble it and then deliver it to you or serve it in the food hall. So they've like commoditized the famous chef's recipe at industrial scale. And now they're going to buy Grubhub and they're going to bring that model to an even bigger delivery system. And it's like, oh, this is wild.
Wow.
Like the reason that the chefs are famous is because you think Jose Andres is going to make you the food.
Yeah.
And now he's just licensed a recipe so someone else can steam bath the food to you and send it to you.
And we don't know how much they're making off these licenses. That hasn't leaked. Wow.
And it's all, also just to be clear, some of it's very expensive because it's famous chefs. So you're buying.
But it's not famous chefs.
This is like a knockoff version of eating dinner in a Vegas casino.
Right.
Where it's like a bunch of restaurants that all claim to be, you know, run by famous people, but it just has their name on it. It's like getting, this is the equivalent of getting room service from a Bobby Flay restaurant in a Vegas casino.
Well, Gordon Ramsay burger is delicious. Let's be clear.
Look, I'm sure some of this stuff is good. It's just, it also isn't the point of going to Gordon Ramsay burger places, the like vibe, like getting takeout Gordon Ramsay seems just wrong. Yeah.
No, that's gross.
Well, I mean, you want to be screamed at in the face by Gordon Ramsay. Yeah,
exactly.
To some extent, the Vegas version of the chain restaurants, like the Vegas Carbone, some people think is the best Carbone because it just like moves the most business and there's the most dumb money flowing through it.
Sure.
Fine. This is very much like, we're going to half make the famous pizza, send it to a food hall, and then a steam oven will finish the famous pizza.
Right.
And then we will put that on Grubhub. And you're just like, oh, this is the end point of a very particular business model that started with cloud kitchens, right? Where you like open the delivery app and it's actually Chuck E. Cheese. And then people are like, what if you didn't even have the Chuck E. Cheese? And they're like, but then you still, you can't just have like wings.com or whatever was in the, so now you need Bobby Flay's name next to it. And you're just kind of like, oh, this is, this circle is getting real weird.
It's but it's all of like, that, but it ends at like a Golden Corral buffet is essentially the end point of this whole system.
In Donald Trump's America, every restaurant is Carbone.
Have you seen people joking about how they don't want DoorDash coming in like a Nissan Altima? They want it in an Uber Black. Like this is that same thing.
Are you serious?
It's just like, it's like sending an Uber Black to a commissary to get your food. Like what is the point anymore? Yeah. I feel like we've just reached a new level of consumerism that is absolutely absurd. And I'm
it's not absurd enough yet.
I would like every part of this process to feel fancy, but actually not be fancy at all.
Right. Exactly.
I want to think it's expensive, even though it sucks.
I just like the idea that you would order any steak from a delivery app has always seemed odd to me. Like it's just, that's not, that's not a great environment for a steak to be in, like in the back of a Nissan Altima for a while.
I feel the same way about delivery sushi. Like, yeah, not about it.
Sorry, I can't relate.
Like, do you know why Meryl Streep was angry in The Devil Wears Prada? Because she was having delivery steak for lunch every day.
Such a good point.
All right, that's it. I've shown, I've told.
Wait, what do you got? Can I add one more thing to this?
Yeah.
So 4 years ago, when there was some other stuff going on in the world, Just Eat, which was then called Just Eat Takeaway, because bought Grubhub for $7.3 billion. And is now selling it to Wonder for $650 million. Wow. I don't know enough about this world to like really process why that is, but that is a giant loss in 4 years.
Yeah, I don't remember the last time I used Grubhub, maybe 2020.
It might have been.
So it makes sense to me.
Well, and Just Eat Takeaway was, for a minute, they were like, it was called Just Eat Takeaway because that was the combination of two businesses. And it was supposed to be the like giant delivery conglomerate that was going to eat everything. And that just has not panned out for anybody.
I mean, the margins can't be good, right? I know nothing about this world, but it's...
I'm guessing the margins on selling microwave Gordon Ramsay is... I don't think it's...
Well, that's,
the,
that's I'm probably sure the, better than...
I mean, not say Gordon Ramsay name. I'm sure the margin on selling microwave Bobby Flay is like Very good.
That's probably a better business idea than people enslaved to McDonald's on motorcycles.
Well, yeah. And all of these companies have said for years, and like Uber and DoorDash among them, that shipping food and stuff is a much higher margin business around a city than people, right? Like giving humans rides is not nearly as good a business as moving steak around for a huge profit. So like you can see it. There was just going to be this time when all of these companies were competing and whoever won was going to be a giant and it was going to be epic and they were going to be the biggest company in the world. And what actually seems to have happened is it's a bunch of like reasonably successful but fairly low margin businesses.
Yeah.
That works well in some places and not in others.
The VC dollars were not able to buy monopolies and then raise the prices, which is the business model for, in particular, Uber for a long time.
Yep.
But look, again, this is just the words I'm using. Just Eat has sold Grubhub to Wonder is a sentence that you now understand.
I don't want to understand it. I want to go back.
Give me a score.
3 Michelin stars.
Very good.
Wow.
That means I'm now a raging asshole and I can't be stopped.
No.
I'm a made man.
No, I'm going to put you in the ring with Bobby Flay and then we'll figure it out from there.
It's all over.
Yes, chef.
Yes.
We got to stop. That's it. That was Show and Tell. We have to take a break. Thank you, Kylie. We'll be right back.
Support for the show comes from Toyota. For many of us, driving is just what you need to do to get from point A to point B. But why not think of it as a reward instead? Make it an experience that captivates the senses by driving a Toyota Crown. The Toyota Crown family comes with the quality and reliability that Toyota is known for, along with the bold and elegant exterior styles. The Toyota Crown sedan has an available Hybrid Max powertrain with up to 340 horsepower and comes with an available bi-tone exterior finish to help you stand out on the road. And the Toyota Crown Signia gives you the space you'd expect from an SUV with a stylish design unlike any other. Whether you're a daily commuter or a weekend road warrior, you can make any drive a thing of beauty with a Toyota Crown. You can learn more at toyota.com/Toyota Crown Family. Toyota, let's go places. Support for the Vergecast comes from LegalZoom. Creating your own business is a real journey, but getting it registered and legally compliant is a necessary hassle. Thankfully, you can trust LegalZoom to help keep you focused on the exciting part. LegalZoom has everything you need to launch, run, and protect your business all in one place, and it saves you from wasting hours making sense of all the legal stuff, like setting up your business properly and remaining compliant. At LegalZoom.com, you can take care of your business's legal needs in just a few clicks. And if you need some hands-on help, their network of experienced attorneys from all around the country has your back. Launch, run, and protect your business to make it official today at LegalZoom.com. And use promo code VERGE10 to get 10% off any LegalZoom business formation product, excluding subscriptions and renewals. Expires December 31st, 2024. Get everything you need from setup to success at LegalZoom.com and use promo code VERGE10. LegalZoom.com and use promo code VERGE10. LegalZoom provides access to independent attorneys and self-service tools. LegalZoom is not a law firm and does not provide legal advice, except where authorized through its subsidiary law firm, LZ Legal Services, LLC. Support for the Vergecast comes from the Home Depot. It's almost the holidays, and whether you're planning to travel or host, it's always a good idea to have an extra layer of safety and security to help ease your mind. And now, with help from the Home Depot, you can stay connected and protected with the convenience of smart home security products. The Home Depot offers a wide selection of products that afford you easy control and automation of your home, with top smart home brands like Ring, Google, Wyze, and more. From smart home cameras with 4K surveillance to doorbells that can be operated with your smartphone, the Home Depot has it all. Whether you're an expert or you're new to smart home tech, the Home Depot can help you find what works for you and your home. Visit the Home Depot online or in store and purchase your smart home products to give you some peace of mind this holiday season. Because smart homes start at the Home Depot.
We're back with the lightning round. I have news. It's not today, but I'm told the lightning round is sponsored.
It's very exciting.
Big money.
We're going to be doing this podcast from a yacht starting sometime soon.
It was sponsored by a boat show. If you run a boat show and you'd like to sponsor the lightning round, please let me know. talk about a sponsor integration, which we are ethically not allowed to do.
I have been trying to come up with a reason to go to the Monaco Yacht Show for journalism for approximately my entire journalism career. That is my, I've always said that the main thing I want to do is figure out a reason to expense drugs. Figure out a journalistically real reason to go to the Monaco Yacht Show is now number one on my list.
You've mellowed in your old age.
Yeah, I just want to be on a boat now. I just sober on a boat. Seems great.
It's very good. All right, lightning round. What do you think?
You have selected three things in the lightning round, which is the least lightning round thing I could imagine. So why don't you go first and do one?
Okay, so my first one, which I just want to talk about very quickly, is something a bunch of people have asked me about this week, and it's ethics and disclosure. So I'll talk about this for as much as anybody wants me to talk about it, and we'll move on to more fun lightning round ones. But this week, Marquez Brownlee made a video. It was a sponsored video, and the video was speeding his car. People got all mad about it. We wrote about it because Marquez is a huge character in tech. We write about other creators all the time. We think our audience wants to know and keep up with the thing. So we wrote about it. Here's what's happening. If you read the story, it's pretty straight. It's on the website. Here's some stuff that happened. Here's the coverage of it. Marquez, we wrote about his wallpaper app recently too. There's whatever controversy. I don't want to dwell on the video or what happened in the video or any of that stuff. What people are asking about is that I think it's Waveform, right? Marquez's podcast. At the end of it or at the beginning of it, they say this is part of the Vox Media Podcast Network. And so people are asking, do we need to disclose this? Should we disclose this in the story? Should we talk about it now? As I think Verchess listeners know, I got no problems with disclosures. Disclosures all night and all day. I think we should be as transparent as possible about potential sources of conflicts. I think we should earn people's trust as just transparently as we can. We talk about the making of journalism more than any other traditional journalists that I can think of. We certainly do more disclosures than any traditional media or any influencers do all the time. I have literally no problem with this. I'm happy to disclose it. The thing that we're running into right now is like, when and why do we disclose things? And so in this case, the Vox Media Podcast Network is an ad sales network, right? If you start a podcast and you just like go onto YouTube or you go onto Spotify's platform or whatever, you're kind of, unless you have big scale, you're kind of stuck with programmatic advertising, whatever the platforms will give to you. And if you want better advertising, you want more money, you need scale. So you join a podcast network that has a lot of inventory across a lot of shows. And then our sellers go out and sell that inventory and then you make more money or whatever. I actually don't know because that's the other side of the house. Right. So the conflict here doesn't exist. Like our sales team is selling ads, which they do on our own website that we don't know about, that they do on the show
right. That
we basically don't know about. As many of you have heard, sometimes we just run the same ad 500 times in a row.
Right.
Like there's a wall between us and sales, and we are very, very, very protective of that wall. Our coverage often loses them money because various companies are mad at our coverage. And they walk away with the deals. I've personally cost this company a bunch of money. But that's the whole point of the wall, right? It's to keep our newsroom away from any of those considerations so that we can just write about what's happening and have editorial independence and freedom. And we can, it's like the first line of our ethics policy is the editorial independence that allows us to cover companies critically without fear or favor or whatever.
Right.
That's the thing that's the most important. That's truly the heart of this whole operation is the independence. So what we disclose is where there's a plausible connection to some conflict in our newsroom. So Comcast, NBC Universal is an investor in our company. They're on our board of directors. They can want to fire me.
Right. They can.
They don't like me a lot.
They might. Yeah.
Right. Like they can have a board meeting and say, we should fire this guy. That is a plausible imposition on our newsroom. It has never happened. We've been running this thing for 13 years, but that's plausible. I think you can fairly look at our company and say, they're at the top of it. The Verge is talking about Comcast. Maybe they'll get him fired. Maybe he's shading the coverage. Fine. So we disclose it. I made a Netflix show. This is just like an open conflict of interest, right? Like every time I talk about Netflix, I should point out that I made a Netflix show. I didn't get paid for it because the company made it, but whatever. I still made the show. Great. Like, I think that's fine. That's a totally rational conflict of interest. There's a plausible connection to the thing and the conflict. There's a million of these. We disclose them all the time. This one, there isn't a plausible conflict. The actually more plausible conflict is that David and I know most of the people on Waveform and we like them.
Yeah.
So I will disclose to you, I've known Marquez for a long time. David has known Marquez for a long time. We know a bunch of the folks over there. We're friendly with them. We generally wish them success. When we cover them, I think we do it as straight as we can. But the actual business conflict, it's not there. And if we open the door to disclosing what our sales side is doing, I think we actually threaten our editorial independence, because then I have to tell the newsroom every single thing they have to disclose.
Right.
And I have to make the newsroom aware of all of the company's commercial and corporate interactions in a way that I actually don't want them to know. That's the whole purpose of the wall, is that they're just going to do their jobs. So there's a line here, and I'm not saying we always get it 100% right, but in this case, that I know what that arrangement is. Like, I know what the Vox Media Podcast Network is. We have a bunch of these deals, like all of Scott Galloway's Prof G shows. We don't own them. We don't make them, but they're in the network. We sell the ads. There are other ones as well. There's all kinds of arrangements. We'll disclose the ones where it's our company. But in this case, it's just a little too removed from our newsroom. In the same way that we run a programmatic ad tech stack called Concert that is on tons of publishers. Every time you see a Concert logo on a web ad, that's Vox Media is serving that one. And we just cannot disclose every partner that Concert. It would bring our newsroom to a halt. And more importantly, it would force me to make every reporter in the newsroom aware of the company's business deals, which is the most important thing.
Right. That's the key, right? Like the not knowing on that side is important. Right. Like there is a thing, we talk about this with creators and stuff all the time, that one of the challenges is knowing what something you do will do to your business. And because of who is advertising and who wants to sponsor your videos and all this stuff, that is a thing you have to reckon with. And a big part of what we're trying to do is not even give people the chance to think about that, because yep. it just changes things.
And I firmly believe that this is getting confusing and muddled, and most people do not understand this.
Yep.
And that's on us. We have to constantly explain it, which is why I'm happy to talk about it whenever anyone asks. That is not how most of the media that most people consume works anymore. Most creators and influencers have absolutely blurred the lines between advertising, between sales. They have investments. Their commercial relationships are in the front of their content. I'm not even calling out any creator. This is the reality of the business on those platforms. If you want to make enough money to eat, this is how you have to play the game.
Yep.
But that's not us. Right? Like, it just isn't us. And so I'm happy to disclose everything. I'm happy to talk about it. There are times where I'm like, no, that one doesn't make any sense. And what I'm really talking about is, if I extend the rule that much, we're actually going to defeat the purpose of the rule, right? We're going to defeat the independence of the newsroom in a way that is the product we sell here, is the independence of the newsroom. I'll give you this example. We disclose Comcast NBC all the time because everybody knows about it. There are other investors in our company. They're there. And if I extend the rule so far, like, I kind of end up in a place where every single morning I'm just telling the newsroom who they should be worried about.
Right. Here's a list of problems.
Yeah. Here's a list of considerations for every story. And I really think that undercuts the promise of what we do here. So like I said, we'll take the feedback. I will talk about it whenever we want. In this case, there's not a plausible connection to the company's commercial activities in our newsroom. I just assure you that there isn't one, to the point where, until people mentioned it to us, I hadn't even thought about it. We're going to keep doing disclosures. My ask of you, if you want to yell at me about this, take 20% of the energy and point it at other media outlets and other creators and influencers. Because I would rather be in a world where the audience is that demanding of everyone, and I'll do my best to live up to it, because that's the thing that's going to rebuild trust in whatever kind of journalism exists. And that we do it, so we get it a lot, right? It's an expectation that we have created with all of you, and I'm happy about that. We receive the expectation. But if you think we're failing, take just 20% of the energy and point at everybody else. Like, it'll make everything a little bit better. All right, David, what's your lightning round item?
Mine's going to be much quicker, because I really don't want to talk about it. Like, we went from something that we like talking about to I don't... under any circumstances want to talk about this, but we have to. And it is that President-elect Donald Trump has said that Elon Musk is going to be leading a thing called the Department of Government Efficiency that is going to do some stuff, cut wasteful government spending. There's apparently going to be a leaderboard on X of all the dumbest ways the government spends money. the only reason I want to talk about this is because I think if I have a bit on this show, it is the question, is this anything? It's the meme of a person holding a like their hand at a butterfly and going, is this anything? This is nothing. This is nothing.
I just say it was announced, and it's announced that it's Elon and Vivek Ramaswamy are going to run it. And it's amazing that the efficiency department has two leaders. Like, you're just coming out the gate with co-CEOs, like BlackBerry style. Perfect. Like, what are we doing?
What could possibly go wrong?
That's very good.
You can't just do a department. You can't just do it.
Like, in life?
I declare department is not a thing the president can do.
Oh, you mean it like in the government?
Yeah. You and I could make a department of, the department of David's pillows. Like, that exists. I did it. We're here.
I feel like your wife might have something to say. Listen, department.
I'm the president. I did it.
Here's my weird pillow room.
But the government cannot just create a department out of thin air because someone says so. That's not how this works.
I'm going to say what? Yeah, you need an act of Congress is the thing. So whatever. The only other thing I'll add to this, because this is going to be fake when we're going to have to talk about it. And this is pure, by the way, decoder bait, and we will definitely talk about it on Decoder. Can you make a fake department in the government? Also, by the way, leaderboards of wasteful government spending, they've been doing that shit since the 80s. Like, some of these ideas, we're just inventing trains again, like the classic Elon Musk.
Yeah.
Anyway, all this is to say, there is a New York Mag article today about the scene at Mar-a-Lago and just like the frenzy of corruption that's happening there. And every time Elon Musk walks into dinner, Donald Trump pulls out his iPad and plays Space Oddity by David Bowie.
Oh, I don't like that at all.
I feel like David Bowie would be very mad, but I also think it's very funny they pick Space Oddity.
Yeah, it's like not exactly the compliment you might think it is.
It's not.
Yeah, but that's enough. We've talked about that enough. What's your next one, Eli?
Welcome back to it. All right, I want to check in on our nation's fourth wireless carrier, which you will recall is a product of Trump 1, when T-Mobile wanted to buy Sprint, and instead of saying no, which is the exact process by which T-Mobile was created. If you recall, AT&T wanted to buy T-Mobile, the government said no, and then T-Mobile had to go out. They took a bunch of money in the breakup fee, but then they became T-Mobile.
Right.
They hired a new CEO.
They did business. You know, like,
we're going to try hard.
Yeah.
We didn't do that with Sprint. The court literally said Sprint sucks so much, no one can fix it. T-Mobile can have it. And to get around this problem, Makan Delrahim, who was the head of antitrust at the time, brokered personally a deal by which T-Mobile would get a bunch of Sprint, and a bunch of Sprint spectrum would go to Dish Network, America's favorite satellite TV service, and they would create a fourth wireless network, which it has been 1 billion years and which does not meaningfully exist. There was a pilot network called Project Genophysis, which offered people NFTs if they signed up for service on the Motorola Edge. That didn't work. Mostly there's been an MVNO, so they resell AT&T and T-Mobile service, a historically successful plan to compete with AT&T and T-Mobile, is just buying their service and reselling it for a fee. That really has them quaking in their boots. They have lit up some towers in some cities. They've decided they're going to let go of all the Genophysis stuff. They're just going to call it Boost Mobile, which is a brand that they acquired in the thing. And now they say they have earned the title of mobile network operator. That's their announcement.
Congrats.
Rather than MVNO, which is mobile virtual network operator, which is what you have to call yourself when you're just reselling other people's service. They have earned the title of mobile network operator. They're a real network now. By the end of the year, it needs to reach 80% of the people. They said, we are well on the way to meeting this goal. They have lit up more than 20,000 of the 24,000 cell sites it's promised to deploy by June 2025. But has anybody seen it?
Has anybody
running ads?
Yeah, like do you have any friends who are on Boost? Like, is that? Yeah.
I mean, people have friends who are on Boost, but they're just reusing AT&T service. You go the subreddits of Genesis or Boost. It's not pretty. And in the meantime, by the way, all other the other three carriers, all they've done is raise their prices.
Yeah, all of the
not
stuff
meaningful
that
competition in this market.
All the stuff that I saw on Project Genesis are basically like, if I stand right here, I get the carrier that I think that I have. And if I am literally anywhere else on planet Earth, it's just AT&T. Like, great. You just got like a slightly worse AT&T phone. Congratulations.
It's a Motorola Edge. You're killing it. We'll see. You know, as always, something will happen. Time will relentlessly go by.
I mean, and you mentioned T-Mobile, but it is possible to do interesting things in this space. Like, there was a time when T-Mobile did the whole Un-carrier bit and everything got purple and John Legere was running around doing crazy stuff. Like, there are interesting moves you can make in this market, and there haven't been any in a very long time.
Nope.
And I think it's like, I am hopeful for Boost. I would say I have precisely zero actual expectations of this going anywhere.
And I will just point out that all they had to do was not let T-Mobile buy Sprint. And so they brokered this complicated deal. Why? Is T-Mobile cheaper? Certainly isn't. So, and by the way, T-Mobile promised that it wouldn't cut any jobs, immediately cut thousands of jobs.
Yeah.
We're entering a period now where there will be more mergers. The Lena Khan era is over, right? All that's going to get turned over. Already streaming, like David Zaslav is like, mergers are back.
Yeah.
Like, the net neutrality is going to go away. You can just see the, hey, should Verizon buy Paramount and bundle it into its service and throttle Disney, is like, there's accountants that just on their boats, just staring off into the sunset, dreaming up ways to raise prices. And it's not going to result in faster service or more reliable service. Almost a guarantee. You want to know what the rich cast is going to be in the next 4 years? It's just me ranting about cell carriers.
Oh, get so ready. The same as always. That's good. It's nice to know that some things don't change, even in these trying times.
Three Michelin stars.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, one more, then we gotta go.
All right, I just very briefly want to pour one out for everyone's 11th favorite streaming service, Freevee, which was, I believe, once called IMDb Free Dive, I think, and then it was IMDb TV, and then it was Freevee, and now it is dying, and just everything is being bundled into Prime Video. This is not going to be sad for very many people, I don't think. Freevee was actually like a sneakily pretty good, pretty light app. So I'm sad to not be able to use it anymore.
Didn't they do Jury Duty?
They did do Jury Duty, which was wonderful. And I actually think Jury Duty is sort of funny because there's all these, we've talked a lot about the fast channels and the sort of rise of ad-supported streaming. And Jury Duty is kind of the only giant breakout hit to ever come out of one of these services. Like, you look at the Roku channel has had a few. They had the Weird Al Yankovic movie that was like kind of around. Tubi is doing stuff. Pluto is doing stuff. Like, this fast universe is growing really quickly, but the huge sort of mainstream content has not really happened. And I think if you look at Amazon is all in on ads. And I think this is the thing that is really starting to happen, is the ad business in streaming is turning really fast now. Netflix is now 2 years into it and it's growing pretty quickly. Hulu is doing really well, and so Disney and ESPN are starting to catch up. Like, the ad supported streaming universe is here in a big way. And I think Amazon, was it earlier this year, turned on the thing where now it's ads by default unless you pay more, and now it's bringing all this free stuff in to give people more stuff to watch with those ads inside of Prime Video. Like, this is the future, and we're going to go back to big giant libraries, mostly stuff you don't want to watch, because they're just trying to churn ad inventory. And I think it's going to change streaming in some really interesting ways. But I am sad Freevee's gone. This is the dumbest name, and I will miss it terribly.
The second they named it.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
They also had like a Bosch Legacy or something. It was like a Bosch spinoff that apparently some people watched. I don't know. I've never felt less connected to pop culture than reading about Bosch Legacy when Freevee died. But I did watch Jury Duty, and it was great.
Jury Duty, they should just make one of those every week.
I agree.
It was very good. All right, we're way over. Thank you to Kylie for being on. Let us know what you think of Show and Tell. Let us know if you have a better name.
Yes, please.
Or if we should actually have scores.
The idea, just so everybody knows, is that we all just sort of bring stories and surprise each other with them. We're gonna teach each other new things and all have thoughts about it on the show. So name that whatever you want.
And please let us know what show the scoring
the scoring mechanism.
We don't know. All right, that's it. That's our chest. Rock and roll.
And that's it for the Vergecast this week. Hey, we'd love to hear from you. Give us a call at 866-VERGE-11.
The Vergecast is a production of The Verge and Vox Media Podcast Network. Our show is produced by Liam James, Will Poor, and Eric Gomez. And that's it. We'll see you next week.
Support for the show comes from New York Magazine's The Strategist. The Strategist helps people who want to shop the internet smartly. Its editors are reporters, testers, and obsessives. You can think of them as your shopaholic friends who care equally about function, value, innovation, and good taste. And their new feature, The Gift Scout, takes the best of their reporting and recommendations and uses it to surface gifts for the most hard-to-shop-for people on your list. All you have to do is type in a description of that person, like your parent who swears they don't want anything, or your brother-in-law who's a tech junkie, or your niece with a sweet tooth. And the Gift Scout will scan through all of the products they've written about and come up with some relevant suggestions. The more specific you make your requests, the better. Even down to the age range, every single product you'll see is something they've written about. So you can be confident that your gift has a Strategist seal of approval. Visit thestrategist.com/giftscout to try it out yourself.